the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another midweek interview guest episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, brought to you as always by ShakePay, the best place for Canadians to buy and sell, never sell Bitcoin and other tokens we won't mention, but you can buy them there as well. If you use our promo code CBP, Charlie Beta Peter, and buy $100 worth, you get $30 on the house in CAD. You can take it out and buy milk and eggs, or you can buy more Bitcoin with it. It's up to you. E-transfers to and from your ShakePay account are free. There's no fees, no overhead. There's a bit of a spread, but like all good businesses, they have to make money somehow. And it's really not that much to ask when you also factor in the shaking sats that you get. So if you use our promo code to sign up, shake your phone every day in the app, you get a couple of Satoshi streamed to your wallet, up to 1,000 sats a day after 200 days, which is pretty good. Those sats stay with you, and you can pull those to your own cold storage wallet anytime you want. Plus, as you know, if you're a listener or viewer of this program, they just started their, they're kind of, you know, hitting their stride now, I think, then, with the prepaid ShakePay card. So you can use your CAD balance to buy stuff and get Satoshis back. And until February 8th. Wow, another month. Great. It's already past January 8th. So I hope it's not January 8th. There's a random chance for you to have your purchase refunded to you entirely in Bitcoin, which you cannot beat.
So you get ShakePaid, by the way.
ShakePaid. That's right. Yeah. So a special promotion till February 8th. So you always get a little bit of Satoshis back, which is great. On top of that, you can have this ShakePaid thing and then shaking sats as well. It's just nothing but Satoshis over at ShakePaid. That's why we picked them to sponsor the show. And we hope you try them out. Charlie Beta Peter is a promo code CBP. And if that doesn't tickle your fancy, you can't remember those three letters, it'll be somewhere in the link or description or whatever to this show.
And that's not hard to find. Tweets.
Len, that was a long intro. We're waiting for our guest here, and I don't see him in the green room. I'm going to keep my email open here. This is business on the air, as they say. We're waiting for Justin Hartzman, CoinSmart CEO, to join us for an hour of fun, excitement, and general debauchery. In the meantime, Len, how are you doing? I haven't talked to you, in all of 20 minutes. So what's going on?
Yeah. All right, Joey. Okay, over here, living the dream, doing what I have to do to maintain my sanity. How about you, Joey?
I'm good. So our guest is in the green room here. I see him. We'll bring him in. It's Jordan Hartzman, CEO, co-founder. I don't know. What did I just call you? I just called you Jordan. Your name's not Jordan. It's Justin. Right. We got too many Jordans on the show, Justin. I'm sorry about that. Co-founder and CEO of CoinSmart, and a well-dressed fella here. What is that? Is that a pocket square for this show?
It is. It's, we've got to jazz it up a little bit here or there where we can. That's for sure.
Do you guys mind? Like, I'm going to go throw in a suit. I'll be back in 10.
I'm just wearing a t-shirt.
I like it. This is good. That's a good look, man. I'm envious. I actually, when I got married in the summer, I ended up wearing like a forest green jacket, and my haters were crushed. Let me tell you that much. It looked great. So your haters probably also just in sort of destitute waters right now, looking at how good you look on the CBP. So, Justin, tell me something. Who are you and what do you do?
Great question. I'm the CEO and co-founder of CoinSmart.com, and we are the only crypto asset trading platform in the world, publicly listed, not only in Canada, but in Frankfurt, with the symbol SMRT, that is a marketplace registered by the OSC and the CSA. So we're very proud of what we're doing here. And what we're really trying to do is make cryptocurrency accessible, help the crypto curious come into the market, educate them, and make them an active participant in the crypto space. And we're doing a really good job at that.
So in terms of your, getting listed, this happened not too distant past, if I recall correctly. Tell us, what is the process of getting publicly listed? What are the benefits and potential drawbacks from being listed publicly?
Well, it's a great question. We're learning about that all right now. The process of actually becoming listed seemed quite like a breeze compared to going through regulation. And we've done that not only in Canada now, but also in Estonia and FinCEN in the US. So, it's a lot of forms. It's a lot of ensuring that we are prepared for that, audits in place, and really being prepared to make sure that we are who we say we are. And we're providing a good investment to people on the capital markets. But prior to us being able to do that, what held us up, we were trying to do it in the summer of 2020 for good cause, was we were looking, we had to receive our restricted dealer or marketplace license from the OSC and the CSA. That was our status that we needed to get the final approval from the NEO exchange to become publicly listed. So it was a many series of events to get there, which all started with building a great company, have audited financials and having the right policies and procedures in place, being regulated, and then finally hitting the capital markets.
It's quite a journey, eh? Like we've kind of been keeping up with you guys. I know we've been playing tag, trying to get this appearance on the books for some time. And so I was, you know, doing a little oppo research, we'll call it, last few days in preparation for your sit down here. I'm curious, Justin, when you guys, you know, when you go through these processes, you obviously don't have public investors at the time you're going through these hurdles and get sort of moving the ball over the finish line, but you do have users who are presumably in contact with you fairly often. And I'm wondering if you guys have a metric or some mechanism to measure the support you got from the users who were already on your platform. Are you finding that since you've registered, since you've gone public and listed, that you have more users of maybe a demo that you were lacking in previously? Or do you find that the growth is kind of steady or the same? What are you guys seeing?
No, I it's a good question. And we don't have a metric that follows that specifically, but I have anecdotally, you know, our CX team, and I get some reports back from them where the conversation is constantly had, where they're excited by that. It shows that, you know, a company that they've liked to use or wanted to use for a long time has transparency to the market. We have the oversight, the policies and procedures in place to ensure they feel the most comfort. And I think that's really not only our job here, but all the great exchanges that we have in Canada and worldwide. We need to ensure that we take some of the black eyes on the market that have happened in the past, even here in Quadriga in Canada, and ensure, you know, the three words we stand for is making cryptocurrency accessible. That's transparency, that's trust, ease of use, and ways to communicate with us really easily. I think that's where we know we're doing a good job, that A, you know, we see a lot of press that happens from it. We see a lot of investors coming in and wanting to talk about it. And then our user growth just moving along that positive direction and talking about it. So I think it is a necessary thing. And for us, you know, we could have been 10x, 100x the size if we decide that we didn't care about regulation and we offer any product we want to any person out there. But what we've always had the belief is to be regulated first. Use that as our foundation, something that we can grow you know, our business, our stock up and to the right for a long period of time. And that's really the foundation that we're going for. You know, I believe, I'll say this with a grain of salt, we were the first crypto asset trading platform in the world, or in Canada, I should say, to be FINTRAC regulated. They told us no twice. They said, no, thank you. We're not interested in crypto. We added FX to our services, so they had to. And now you must be. So those are the kind of steps that we've always taken to ensure that we're in compliance and doing right for our customers.
But this grant of marketplace registration that you got this, you know, not too long ago, from what I recall, tell us, like, what's the positive impact from getting this? I mean, because for somebody like me sitting in this chair, it's hard for me to contemplate exactly how this will give you a positive impact, but maybe you can give us a rundown.
Well, I think for our users, A, it gives better pricing, matching orders within each other. That's always a good thing, using a market, you know, a market book to actually do your trading activity. I think the oversight and the policies and procedures that have to be in place for us, you know your product, KYP, what we can offer, what we can't offer, how we do our custody of our coins, the insurance that we need to have for the customer, creates a fair and equal marketplace, better pricing, better transparency, and more safety, knowing they're working with someone who's really following what's going along. So as a business, you know, there's positives that come from business growth and opportunities that we have, but really the big thing is for our customers, our investors, our clients, everyone that we deal with, to make sure they're really in the right place dealing with the right people.
So I'm you know, looking at your website here, and you talk about this in some of your other appearances, and, you know, whether I agree with the listing of multiple coins or listing of, you know, other stuff, it's not for us to talk about now. What I will say though is that other changes we've had on don't always have what I would call this sort of learning suite for new customers that you're onboarding. And to your credit, even people who are not customers, because I'm on a browser now that is not signed into my CoinSmart account, and here I am looking through some of this stuff. So can you give us a little bit of the rationale behind why you guys are putting that kind of education sort of in a public-facing prominent place, and what you view as valuable for the public to know before they get into Bitcoin or crypto more broadly?
Yeah, well, I won't go into the coin offering that we have. There's a process. You mentioned that. I will say a little sneak peek. If everyone looks closely, we just added Solana to the platform this afternoon. So everyone go in there and get one of my favorite coins out there. I'm not saying invest in it. I'm not giving
Canadian Solana podcast. What is going on over here?
I'm a Bitcoin at heart, but Solana, come on. They're doing some cool things over there. So that was listed earlier today. But to your point, education is key. You know, when I went back, I said three words are important to us: making cryptocurrency accessible. That's all about educating, making people understand, or helping them, not making them, but helping them to understand what they're getting into in what is a very complex market is always key for us. And providing resources is just part of our DNA. And I said that before, get the crypto curious in the door, help educate them, and be an active participant in the cryptocurrency community. We want more people in it. There's only 1.5% of the world who's in cryptocurrency today. We have just under a $3 trillion market cap. This is still the first half of the first inning. We might be getting to the second half of the first inning right now with some things that are going on, but it's our duty to help educate. And we do it in an interesting way. If you really dig in, you'll see we provide a lot of our resources and articles in three versions: smart, savvy, and genius. You know, smart, I'll go a 5-minute article to understand the basics, savvy to really get in there and have an in-depth conversation, then genius, really the white paper sort of version of what's going on behind the scenes. So you can go in and really educate yourself on the level that you feel appropriate.
In terms of what you're listing, I just want to go into this a little bit further. What goes into the process of actually listing or delisting one of these digital assets? I see you don't have Tether, for instance, or XRP, and I could imagine why you're not listing either of those two, but I see you have USDC as an alternative to Tether. But what is the process to actually screen what goes in and what goes out from being listed from your exchange?
Well, this comes down to regulation again. You know, as a restricted dealer or marketplace, we have to have a KYP policy. I mentioned that a little earlier, know your product. And for us, we have a standard anywhere, I think, between 20 and 27 different metrics that we look at to understand if a project should be listed or a token should be listed on our platform. Things like how it was originally funded, the team behind it, how many the developer community, how many updates to the technology are happening at given times, where it's listed, the volume in which it has. And most importantly, to the point you mentioned XRP and USDT, if anything has any regulatory body that's recognized around the world that has an issue with it, that's something that we don't offer right away. We step back from that and wait and see till it's been cleared or not, and then we decide how we want to service that. So in Canada, if you are a restricted dealer or a marketplace, we actually are not allowed. It's not a choice for us. They're prohibited XRP and USDT today.
Justin, you guys have on your website a service where it looks like you're encouraging and even offering some kind of help through what you're calling a smart pay auto sell for people who want to accept Bitcoin as payment for services or products. This to me is, you know, probably a first in Canada. I haven't seen any other exchange in Canada doing this, and we've talked to a number of other exchanges. How much demand is there for this product, and what are you guys doing to encourage people to use this kind of service? Because we talk a lot on this show about the sort of the adoption curve of the Lightning Network, for example, and how it relates to payments and whatnot. So I'd be curious to hear what you guys are seeing on your end for something like this.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you're digging into this. A great question. For us, it's a significantly growing business line of ours, you know, millions of dollars in revenue last year alone through it. And there's a couple reasons why. A, businesses want to take payments, whether it's for goods or services that they're offering. And that's one piece of it. But I think where we're seeing an even larger adoption right now, and we'll see that grow this year. We have a bunch of new pieces and phases coming out of that, which are exciting. We can talk about at a later time. But I think where we're seeing a lot of growth right now is there's people who are working from home everywhere, right? That's a big thing. We're not in offices. I am in my office, something that I like. But a lot of people are working from home, and they're not even working for local people anymore. They're working for someone in Asia, US, Mexico. It doesn't matter where. But if you're a team member here and you're getting your payment in through crypto, which a lot of people are starting to do, what happens is you get paid from Hong Kong at 4 a.m. And if you got paid 2 days ago at 4 a.m, you woke up, you might have 10% less on your paycheck. You know, that's just the volatility in the market. So what we've set up as part of our smart pay process is we eliminate all that market risk where, you know, you can set it, you can come in, put in, give them your wallet address. On our side, decide, you know, is 100%, 10%, 20%, whatever you want to keep in crypto. Most people do, you know, 10 to 20%, a lot of zero. We automatically convert the difference into fiat and wire it out to you the next morning. So it's actually converting it and causing it, causing you to not be caught up in market conditions and volatility and receive what you're expecting to receive.
So now that you're publicly listed, we get a glimpse into your balance sheet and your operations. And I'm looking at the last 2 months that were reported on November and October of 2021. And you look at the revenue, it's going up. Everything is going in the right direction. But one thing we talked about on our show last week, or actually 2 days ago, was the fact that you're reporting no debt on your balance sheet for both months. And I assume that's probably something that's by design more than anything else. But given in today's day and age where debt is really cheap and accumulation of debt is not a big thing, like you look at Michael Saylor, for instance, is his strategy. What's the rationale for you for maintaining no debt? Is this something that is beneficial to investors that when they look at it, they see there's no debt in the balance sheet, they like this? Or is this something else maybe you're holding out for later on? Maybe you could deploy debt later on for expansion purposes.
Great question. The reality is we just don't have debt on our books. We haven't had it and throughout 2020 and onwards. The rationale is we've been a profitable company since 2019. We use our profits to grow. We've raised capital last year to go on our public journey. And we have a treasury of over $23 million right now. So we're using that for scale and expansion. And as we look to rapidly expand that at a faster pace, we'll look what that looks like into the future. So really just a function of where we are financially today.
Justin, I wouldn't normally pull a question from the chat, but I got a good one here. And I'm kind of just looking through the education stuff, and I don't see anything there about self-custody for Bitcoin.
Good question. It's a really good one.
So where is the educational piece about self-custodying your coins? That's a big part of the ethos in Bitcoin. And honestly, I think even if you're holding an alt, like you can probably pull from the exchange pretty quickly. Most hardware wallets will take probably the coins you guys have. So what's the gap there in the education for self-custody on coins?
I think if you dig in, you'll find it. There's many articles about that there. They're a little bit older. Maybe we should renew them. But that was some of the first things we talked about, people, not your keys, not your crypto. So I think digging in, you will find many articles on that. We can't go too in depth, and we can't give tutorials on a certain hardware device or not, because if we gave advice on one that we thought was better or promoted one, if anything ever happened, there'd be some liability that went behind that. So we really give some generalities of the rationale, why, what does exist on the market and the features and functions that they do have. But you will find it if you do take a look.
Okay, that's fair. Good answer. Thank you.
I'm curious, do you have any plans that you could share with us about moving forward? Is there maybe potential expansion into the United States or anything that you could share with us? I'd love to hear.
Yeah, really, we're building out the financial institution of the future. You know, our name is CoinSmart Financial, our publicly traded company. We are not only looking to win Canada across the board as a crypto asset trading platform, but we're the only Canadian platform now that has an FIU license out of Estonia. Lithuania is coming on board in the next couple of weeks right now. We have passport to 40 plus European countries. We're full scale going into them now, as well as Latin America and Australia on that back end of this year. So really growing a larger total addressable market. doing through that through M&A activity as well as organic growth and paid growth along those lines. But the rationale, more than just moving to those jurisdictions for a bigger market, is our registration status there allows us to offer a lot more product set than we can in Canada right now with regulation. So you'll be seeing some staking and some lending and a bunch of other very exciting NFT marketplace things coming online in our alternative jurisdictions. And when we work with Canada to achieve what we're looking for to do here in Canada, which is a conversation we're having all the time, and we'll find a way, we'll be ready just to turn the switch on here and let our amazing, you know, client base be part of it as soon as we possibly can. Because for me, you know, I'm a big proponent of regulation. You've heard me say that a lot right now. I'm just trying to find the equilibrium where we need to find a quicker way to find proper regulation across multiple product sets, so we don't have Canadian investors coming to us because they trust and believe in what we're doing, on-ramping, buying what they want, and then just offshoring that to someone who offers them a great APY on holding their coins, or a DeFi platform that's, you know, based on a smart contract that regulators don't have jurisdiction over. So let's find a safe and good route to make that happen right here in Canada.
So a question on that front, we've talked to a number of other exchanges, people in your chair with different banners behind them. And, you know, one of the things we've heard over and over again is that there's no consistency or no standard for like a risk algorithm that determines when somebody is engaging in behavior that regulators have an issue with. And it seems to me to be up to the exchanges more or less to determine which behavior is too risky for their, you know, day-to-day operations and what they should be reporting to FINRAC or FinTrack and other regulatory bodies. What do you guys look at when it comes to what transactions are safe and what transactions are, you know, I don't know, unsafe maybe is the right word?
Well, we want to create a fair marketplace. So we want to ensure that people aren't doing things on there that are unfair to other market participants. So, you know, that's a pretty proprietary information that we don't give out. But just to put it out there, we're looking for people who are, you know, wash trading or trying to trade between different accounts, or who are, you know, putting stink bids in or looking for API access that they shouldn't have or data that they can't have, and patterns in their trading on a day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month basis. And if things come up in our system, which we've built, that flag that, we look into that, we investigate, and we ask them to be removed from the platform if it's something that's going against a fair and regulated marketplace. So there are softwares out there, great companies, Solidus Labs and things like that, who are creating software and generally for this. But that's kind of the stuff that we build internally of our own IP, the algorithms behind that. And it's something that we look to the future to maybe make available to others to use at the same time, because we're really at the forefront of it.
When you identify such a user that's potentially doing wash trading, do you share this information potentially with other exchanges and maybe authorities so that they can't do this within the Canadian soil?
Not with other exchanges right now, but yes, with the regulators as part of our ongoing audits and reporting, we do that. So it's definitely a piece of the puzzle. Listen, we're big into this stuff. At the end of the day, we want to create this environment that's healthy, that people can trust. You know, a big metric that we follow, I just looked at it the fourth quarter of this year, you know, something that we'll be reporting shortly, is the number of dollars that we've saved on behalf of our clients from fraud or elderly abuse out there. Those are all the sort of things that we look at. You know, if you're of a certain age doing a certain deposit, you automatically get a call from our compliance department to ensure that it's something that shouldn't be happening. So we really do spend a lot of time and effort thinking about this. And it will be a metric that we bring to the public very shortly, because I'm not talking hundreds of dollars. I'm not talking thousands of dollars. I'm talking millions of dollars saved on behalf of people. Yeah.
That's good stuff. You know, we talk a lot about the regulatory overreach that has creep potential in this space. So I'd actually prefer that exchanges did it. You know, as opposed to the Fed. The question I have for you is around Bitcoin itself and sort of the related product suites you've seen pop up over the last, especially 6 months. I'm thinking specifically about the Ledin mortgage product. I'm thinking about these interest-bearing accounts that BlockFi, Ledin, and others offer. And I'm asking, you know, I'm curious, I should say, what do you guys have in the pipeline there? Because presumably, most people feel comfortable with Bitcoin before they feel comfortable with some of the other tokens you guys are listing. And so even if you wanted, you know, customers to venture into additional coins, really that Bitcoin comfort would be the Trojan horse to do that. So what do you guys have in the product pipeline, if you can share, of course, on that front, to kind of get people interested in these other products using a suite of Bitcoin products?
Well, listen, I love that Lenin put that announcement out, that the mortgage backed by it is something that I've thought about for a long time, even for myself, you know, what's going on out there. So I really like what they're doing there. Without saying anything I can't, I mentioned that we're going to get into a lot of lending and a lot of APY and high interest accounts, and people hold a lot of assets with us. And, you know, to be frank with you, right now, they're a cost center for us. It costs to transfer, it costs to store, it costs to insure, because we insure those things. We want to be able to provide back, you know, 8 to 20% back to our users just from holding with it, and being another business line for us where we can add an additional 2 to 4% to our margin on every dollar on platform. So really, we'll be offering all these great products which have been built in the jurisdictions that allow us to do that when they allow us to do it. We do not have plans to go to the US right now. I think that was a question earlier, but our other expansion areas are definitely a place where we will be offering said products.
I want to take one of the questions from the audience here. Abdullah Salim writes, how do you feel about these crypto ETFs available in Canada? I'd love to know your thoughts on this, because the way I'm looking at it, there may be some direct or even indirect competition to you, because the money that would be going to one of these ETFs would potentially not be going to an exchange to purchase that said token, or coin. So I'm curious to know, what are your thoughts?
It's a great question. Actually, one that I love to answer. I think they're great. I think they're good. I think they are an entry point for people who want to get into the market but don't want to understand the intricacies of it or hold the underlying asset. I think they're bad on the other side, because A, you're paying extraordinary fees to the people who are administrating them. And what does administrating them actually look like? You know, I know how to deal with crypto. And they're directly correlated to the price of cryptocurrency that they're underlying. So that be said, you know, a ton of money's flown into them. It's allowing institutions to get into them who otherwise couldn't be playing in this market. But that's exactly a lot of the play that we took here, and the rationale why we went to the capital markets. One, we're not correlated directly to the price of cryptocurrency. We're actually the plumbing, where the pick and axe is, where all the crypto goes through. When the market's volatile, like we've just seen over the last few weeks, and we see, those are some of our best trading days ever, best, most profitable days, because people are actively trading in the environment. So we are actually a little bit of hedge against that. You know, without getting into too many details, we are severely undervalued on the market today. And we can talk about that if you choose.
We have to now.
undervalued on the market. And the reality is, this is the opportunity that we want to work and give the opportunity to large institutional investors worldwide. That's why we're multi-listed, to come in, be part of the ecosystem, and really invest in a company that's doing some really great things. So I think those were a good pathway for companies like us to get to a capital market, to get to an entirely different set of customers to buy the investment, and institutions who otherwise wouldn't have the opportunity to.
Justin, you mentioned something there that we've talked about a number of times on the program, and that it's the volatile moments in Bitcoin and the adjacent tokens. What do you guys do to stay afloat during those periods? Because if you go on any of the major exchange subreddits, it is a flood of just, it's a bloodbath, right? My fucking money won't come in. I can't fucking sell. I can't fucking buy. I got no, the price is down. My limit order didn't hit. Fuck. So what do you guys do differently to keep yourself up? And some introspection here. What areas do you have room for improvement on in that regard during those volatile times?
It's a good question. I'll be honest with you across the board, because I think it's the only way. We're only scratching the surface of what our technology can do. We can handle, I think maybe we're at 2 to 3% of what our overall tested environment could handle. So we're not really in a place where I have to worry about that yet, but it's something that we constantly test and look for and think about in the way of handling it when the time needs to be handled. But systems break all the time. Third-party services go down, which are out of our control. And those are just the ways where we step in, and we're different than everyone else, is the best customer experience and support in the business. That's where we can be different. We can be there to support them. We can there to solve their problems. We can there just to, you know, just hold their hand when they need it, when something's going on. And that's the reason why, you know, we see a lot of organic growth, because when they have that sort of experience, whether it's, you know, learning to come onto a platform, sending their first dollar, making the first trade, making their thousandth trade, and they have that kind of CX experience that they won't get anywhere else. We're the only 24/7, 365 omni-channel live support, chat, social media, phone, you name it. We're the only ones to do that. When we're there, they tell their friends and family. That's something that you can't get at another exchange. It doesn't matter what tools you have, what margin you might get on a foreign exchange. If you can't get your $100 where you want it to be when you want it to be there, nothing else matters.
So I would imagine the majority of your staff is working remotely given the current situation that's going on in Ontario. How easy was it for you to transition from mostly or primarily working from in the office to now working for a lot of the people working from home? Because I would imagine, you know, you just talked about it, you have a lot of your people doing customer support and you have to have rapid response right away. Curious, how was the transition to working from home or having your staff work from home?
Well, we can answer this in two ways. I don't like it. You know, I'm in the office right now. It's something I like, being in my environment. I like being here. I like the fact that we can run into each other, solve a problem, have a collision in a hallway that creates a new idea. The camaraderie, I love it. And I think the team really likes that too. But frankly, a large chunk of our team is dispersed, you know, half of it in the first place. We have people all around the world, the best at of what they do. We don't care where they are, and they're doing it from home at any given time. And communication, planning, and management are the ways that we do that. Listen, we were, since, what is it, March 2020, we haven't been in office, and we've had some of our biggest growth years while doing that. So I'm a big proponent looking to get people back in. We've had them in up until the holiday season again on a flexible schedule, 3 days in, 2 days out. And we'll see where we go from now, and we'll go from there. I personally like being in office, but my co-founders are always fighting against that. We'll see where we land.
I just want to bring my dog if I go back. That's all. That's all. the only thing I really asked for. So I guess, Justin, the next logical question for you is, if I look at some of the exchanges across the country, I'm thinking specifically of, you know, our sponsor ShakePay, for example, has always on their website hiring. That team has been growing. That hiring page has been up for a year. Yeah. Where are you guys going to see growth as far as your staff and sort of the projects you've already mentioned? Where do you guys need to bring in some expertise and some additional manpower?
We're hiring like crazy. Every day, one to three new people joining. It's all about scaling right now. And that can be anywhere. We want the best people from anywhere who want to join something that's different. Something that's in this new emerging market that's growing very quickly. And we're pulling some amazing people from very traditional companies, because, you know, you can be the best of the best in a traditional financial industry, but like, who cares? Crypto is the next wave. Why don't you be the number one space there and make your mark in it? So really happy to have something like our chief compliance officer, or head of CX, or our legal officer. Like, these are just people who come from the top law firms, the top, you know, Quest Trade and CI Financial coming over to us. And then it's just really crypto centric individuals who love what they do, whether it's in marketing or customer experience, from anywhere in the world. And what we really do is encourage our team to go out there and bring those people in who they like to work with. And we offer a bounty for doing that. So it's just a matter. And it's not easy, by the way. I'm not trying to say it's easy. It's very hard to find them. But we do have some things going for us that make it exciting and a great industry to be joining.
Well, I want to go double back to the fact that you were talking about, or the point you were talking about, staking, that you potentially might be offering in a not too distant future. And I think this is going to be encroaching on some of the traditional banks in what they're offering. And it's probably going to make maybe them not too happy, given the fact that the APY that you could offer is significantly higher than what they can. Do you think that this would be a relationship between the banks, the traditional banks? Would it be a good relationship or a bad relationship? Would you be working with them to perhaps even provide them some of the services like staking, for instance? Or are you just going to go, head to head against them and actually crush them in their own game?
Well, they're going to have to get on the train, or they're going to be left behind at some point. That's how I look at it. The fact that it's still hard for a publicly traded registered company like myself to get operating accounts at big five banks is completely asinine. Mm-hmm. it makes no sense whatsoever. But I think that will change over time. It's going to take some lobbying, but it's a risk versus reward thing. Remember, we're a small set of clients versus their giant big banks in Canada. So I understand the rationale. But the issue is, it's not that they're going to be, they are being left behind right now. Money is flowing out of banks. You know, why keep money? Why keep $1,000 in your checking account if I can keep it in a stable coin that has no volatility? I know you don't love that, but in a stable coin with zero volatility, they make 12% a year on. It just doesn't make sense to have it in the bank. And I can go spend it easily with a debit credit card that are available out there today. It is something that will have to change, you know, as consolidation happens in this market, like it does in any emerging market. You may see big banks buying, you know, exchanges or platforms and things like that to come in, because they're not building it, that's for sure, on that side. So it's a wait and see game, and it's something that I spent a lot of time thinking about and talking about, and hopefully have some 2022 will have some big advancements in that way. But you know, watch out. Banking services are on our list of things that we'll be offering, and we're talking with innovative people worldwide to make that happen. So Canada, get on board.
You don't really strike me as a wait and see guy, Justin, I got to tell you. And I think we should talk about where you see some of this regulatory fog clearing up over the next year, because I think there's no doubt there's a target on the back of, you know, certain tokens, XRP we mentioned and Tether we mentioned. It seems to me that the US is more keen on regulating something like a stablecoin than they are providing a spot ETF, at least at the moment. And in Canada, I'm, you know, I wish our regulators were more public facing. They are not. They are shadowy, as the meme goes. And
not to me. We get to speak all the time.
Well, that's what I'm hoping to hear about. So tell me a little bit about where you see this sort of fog of war clearing for people like Len and I, or even you guys at the exchange level. Where's the clarity coming from? And What do you think you're going to see from an exchange perspective, and also, of course, a publicly traded equity perspective in the next year or so?
Yeah, it's a good question. The answer for me is kind of two-sided. They want to be helpful. I truly believe that's the case. I think the regulators want to get there, and they know that either they do or it's going to happen without them, which is the interesting piece of it. But the amount of knowledge that they have and their ability to keep up with what's going on is just not really attainable for them. And every time they pick up a new piece of it, something new comes out. And listen, they have to compare that to traditional markets that have 100+ years of regulation, thought, and energy put into it. And they have policies and procedures that make sense for those. They just don't make sense always here. And I'm not going to get into like some war stories that I've had, but like,
you could, if you want.
Oh, I don't feel like stepping on toes of people who are helpful for me and I believe in what they're doing, but you know, it's going to have some fogginess for the next little while. And there's, you know, we're at multiple steps. There's OSC and CSA, which is what dealing with things going on right now. And IROC's a whole other beast that we're going to have to work with on that side of it to regulate other products that are pretty like they have to figure it out at some point, because as I mentioned earlier, if you don't do it in a regulated fashion here quickly, all the money's flowing over there that you can't do anything about. And if you can't do anything about it, how are you actually protecting the Canadian investor, which is your mandate and what you're telling us that you're trying to do? So that's what the argument that I have, and something that it will be exciting to see what happens over the next 12 months. I will tell you this, while I believe in regulation and it's something that I care about very much and I understand the reason for, I will push this very hard. I will work very hard to bring those things in Canada that I think are necessary in other jurisdictions as well, that put us on a stage to provide our investors the ability to get access to the products that they deserve, and no one should be telling them that they can't. So that is the promise that I'll bring to the table. I will fight for it, and I'll see what I can do to help make sure everyone gets what they're looking for.
You're a pit bull. I don't want you on the wrong side of my... So let's keep on good terms if we may. But I just want to change the topic quite a bit here and talk about being publicly listed, and you're currently listed on the NEO exchange. Is there any thoughts, and you don't have to answer this if it's, you know, I don't want to pry too much, but...
Don't give them an out before you even ask the question. Well,
I don't need outs. I'll tell you to go, you know what, yourself if I don't get
the question. I'm just wondering, do you plan on uplisting to perhaps even the Venture Exchange or the TSX? Because that would give you access to quite a bit more possibility to raise funds. But I mean, getting to the NEO is quite a feat as itself, but I would imagine that maybe you have aspirations to be uplisted to the venture or
TSX. With the NEO, very entrepreneurial. I really like the team over there. They're very helpful and instrumental in some of the regulatory pieces that we had to work on at the end to get this accomplished. And quite frankly, they're a premier exchange. They offer first and level, second quotes and data to services around the world that TSXV doesn't and CSE doesn't. They charge for those things. You know, it felt like a good fit for us and they've been helpful. So that was our decision. The also fact was based on our timing, we couldn't go through some of the rigmarole from the other exchanges because we had a very short period of when we had to get our RTO completed and we had to get our actual registration from the OSC, and they were helpful to achieving that. That said, day one, before we even planned or thought about who we were going to list with, we were already TSX eligible, not even venture, just based on the amount of assets that we have, our reporting, the audit status, and all that sort of stuff. So I think that it's something that's definitely talked about and thought about. I'm not going to put out too many things that I can't say, but I'd be remiss to say that it wouldn't be an option for us, or it wouldn't be something that we were thought about as we continue to move forward on our journey and see where we go from there.
Okay, Justin, we're getting close to the end here. I have one more question. Len's got probably one more, and then I'm going to give you the usual gears that we give our guests at the end of the show. You know, I know I've watched a couple of your interviews, like I mentioned, and you are keen on telling the interviewers that you do not want to talk about price. I don't care. So what do you think of the Bitcoin price over the next year or so? And I'm not asking for a number. I'm more asking for, you know, maybe the inflows we could even talk about, since you guys are you know, a company that has eyes on that, and the market cap and sort of the broader investable options for people. I know we talk on our program quite a bit about equities, for example, like much like you guys and the miners and whatnot. Where do you see the most money coming into the Bitcoin and crypto space over the next year? Is it in the assets themselves? Is it in adjacent companies? Is it in exchanges and retail products? What do you think?
I think it's all the above. I think the adoption's picking up right now. I think companies like ours with a really good story, and again, undervalued stock price right now, very undervalued compared to our market comparable.
It's unbelievable book talk here.
Not financial advice.
Not financial advice at all. Is that there's more options for the institutional players to come in and put money into the market now. So we're going to see more of that. I think we're going to see an evasive move past that $3 trillion mark. We hit that this year. We've come off of it. But I think we're going to see a lot more money come into it. This is the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, but I think we're seeing a lot of money flowing into things that are Bitcoin as well, but a lot of things that aren't Bitcoin. Considering the rationale of the price of it, and everyone likes to own a whole of something, the fact that people really believe in, and they can have this belief that there's opportunities for greater growth or upside in some of the up and coming projects that exist today. And I think they're going to see a lot more, DeFi projects where people are putting investable dollars and getting some great returns out of it and actually understanding that, because it's going to be easier to use while companies like ours help to do that out there. So across the board, I see that happening. And I think it's multi-layered, not only in the assets, but the adjacent companies and the equities like ours that sit on public markets. I think all of that's going to help push this forward.
So I'll be brief on this one. Thoughts on the Lightning Network and any plans in integrating it into your product?
Yeah.
Well, it's not too lightning getting it to market. I'll put it that way, not to sound cliche, but we've been talking about the Lightning Network for 4 years, 5 years? I don't know, a long time. We need it. It's something that I think makes a lot of sense, reducing friction of time, making Bitcoin more available as a daily spend is something that's interesting. The fact that it reduced the cost to sending the money around, all things are key security aspects. We need it. I just, for me, it's kind of like Satoshi. Does it really exist?
I like it. Okay, Justin, two questions to finish. One, your wife told you to get a hobby a few years ago. You started a business that's become very successful. What's she doing with all her free time now? Knitting, pottery. What's going on over there at the home front? What's she doing with all this extra time while you're talking to guys like us?
She's supporting me. You know, that's
I love it, man.
A great lady.
Good answer. Good answer. Len and I are fortunate to have that too.
Yeah, she's you know, very involved, not on a day-to-day basis, but on special projects and ensuring that I have the space and area for me to do that. You know, I'm not the easiest guy all the time to live with. I've got lots of stress going on. As you can see, I don't drink any caffeine. This is just my natural, you know,
incredible
all time. This is how
Red Bull.
Yeah, no Red Bull, nothing, zero caffeine in me. You know, I drink water. That's it, water. You know, she's doing what she does. She helps keeps everything afloat and spends some time, and I bounce ideas off of her, and she's just helpful wherever she can be. So she actually has the kids in Florida right now, homeschooling them during this time, so I can spend my time here at the office and ensure I give the time I need to get the things done I need to get done.
That's great, man. Len and I are often, much like you, we joke about how this podcast started because our wives were tired of talking to us about Bitcoin. Now here we are, you know, just under a year later, and it's been quite a ride. The last question I have for you, do you know what it is, Justin? This is how I know whether or not you listened to any of the shows before you came on. Do you know what the last question is going to be?
I don't make predictions, so go ahead.
Okay, so we like to ask at the end of the show a question that'll ruffle some feathers in your boardroom, your C-suite, maybe your personal life. And unfortunately for you, now that you're on the show and you've already done close to an hour, you have to answer this question too. So you are one of two co-founders, according to your team's media page, you and a fellow named Michael Corral, whose name I hope I'm pronouncing correctly. You also have a fellow named Stephen Kraft.
I'll correct that. Michael Coral.
Okay. Michael Coral. Okay. And a fellow named Stephen Kraft, who's your ops lead, and a fellow named Jeremy Coven, who's your COO. Now, most of the time, when we talk to an exchange or we go to an exchange or we, you know, set up an interview like this, we can kind of pin down one person who this CEO or otherwise guest of the show should have to take on in a foot race to sort of defend their honor in the boardroom. But since there's four of you, if all four of you were lined up,
Michael, Jeremy, and I were the three co-founders at the company.
Okay. You, Mike, and Jeremy are in the parking lot. Okay. Mm-hmm. Below wherever you are now, 40 yards away is the finish line. You guys are all wearing your favorite Nike shorts, t-shirts, whatever. Who's winning the race by how much?
Well, if we want to do it fair, Jeremy's going to win that race. If you don't want to do it fair, I'm definitely winning that race.
I love it. Okay, that's the right answer. Justin Hartzman, CEO, CoinSmart. Give people a handoff. Where can they find you? What are you doing? All that good stuff. It's all you, man.
Yeah, man. I'm here. I'm available. You can reach me at jh@coinsmart.com. Always happy to answer questions as time permits. And really, we're just trying to make cryptocurrency accessible, as I said. So come ask the questions. We'll be there for you. Come and join the market, join the cryptocurrency community. We love to have you. Thank you very much, everyone.
That was great, man. Appreciate your time. Take care, everybody. We'll see you very soon.
All right. Take care. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Adios.